Well, the media and pundits and politicians and analysts are doing it again. They are telling stories about polling, making conclusions about political polls you just can't make. And so it is time for some real talk about political polls and what they mean or don't mean in podcast 932, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Whew. So if you're listening to this podcast in Minneapolis and St. Paul and you want to help community businesses located in those areas that had so much unrest recently, I got to mention 36 Lynn Independent Fueling Station, which is independently owned and operated and community-focused. It's the refueling station at 36 and Lindale Avenue in the Lynn Lake neighborhood in Minneapolis. I've been going there for years, as I often mention. So the guys at 36 and Lynn are super into the community. They feature a great selection of locally sourced products in the store, from great coffee to burritos and other awesome food to go. They also have good fuel options because they have a little bit more leeway as an independent refueling station. So think of 36 and Lynn next time you swing through Minneapolis and need a gas fill-up or a cup or whatever. More info and great 36 Lynn events. Check them out online at 36 Lynn. That's 36LYN, 36Lynn.com, or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Same goes for manufacturing in the United States. If you are in the decision-making chain and you think that we should bring manufacturing back to the U.S., don't be all talk and no walk. Get on the good foot and contact Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing in Ramsey, Minnesota. Visit their website at depotstar.com. Well, I have to do this. I always end up having to do this before every election, especially in presidential years. And I couldn't tell you why there is such a level of ignorance when it comes to something like political polling, but there is. Either you have reporters and pundits sharing horrible analysis or creating horrible analysis, or you have out-and-out rejection of all polling, such as in words and statements like, "The polls lie." So polling is a tool. Whether it's internal polling by political campaigns, news organization polling, networks, newspapers, websites, and magazines. So lay people are always quick to tell you why the polls lie, but they really don't know what they're talking about. And by now, most reporters and analysts have at least figured out that you have to average polls, which, by the way, isn't that great, averaging apples to oranges. In other words, different polls with different methodologies and different questions. And then there's all this confusion about partisan polling, push polling, and other forms of promotion and marketing that aren't market research, in other words, polling, but are actually marketing efforts. So how are these research efforts conducted? Are they conducted on phones or landlines, smartphones, online, all kinds of issues like do not call lists, email to spam features on email servers, and so forth? So we tend to take well-known and relatively trusted names in polling, whether it's AP ISPOS or NBC News, CBS Harris, etc. So you take the well-known polls and you average them. The other thing that drives me crazy with statistics these days, picking a number, any number, and claiming it as an indicator of what is to come. Just because something happened doesn't mean it will happen again. For example, is unemployment the economy? And the answer is no. And I've mentioned this before in more than one podcast. We use GDP, gross domestic product, as the key result in national economic performance across the world. Unemployment, for example, is fraught with reporting problems, as are all these other surveys concerning labor and economic activity and even the stock market. So a politician should never go out and say unemployment is down and use that to claim the economy is quote unquote doing great. We keep doing this in this country, looking at unemployment as though the unemployment numbers are the economy. And we're going to learn the hard way they are not. And the same is true with polling. You don't look at a national number, especially a one-off, and say so-and-so is doing better than so-and-so, or so-and-so is doing better, or this spells trouble for the president. So the following cannot be said enough in this particular discussion. The popular vote does not elect presidents. Presidents in the United States are selected by the Electoral College, and those electors are chosen by state legislatures. In a majority of states, as you know or don't know, electors vote with the majority of popular votes in that state. In a few states, the electors are not bound by their state's popular votes. Moreover, states in the United States run the elections. How people vote, when people vote, how the votes are counted, what the ballots look like, how campaigns are funded, primaries and caucuses, absentee ballots, and so on. Local and statewide elections are controlled by individual states. And there, of course, are some observances of federal election laws, but in general, we do not hold national elections in the United States. We hold 50 state elections and several territorial elections, and territories don't get an electoral vote. When you vote for the president, you are not voting for the president. You're just voting in what is, you know, could be referred to as a beauty contest. And then the actual voting is done by the Electoral College according to the laws of the state in which those electors are voting. Each state's electoral college is dependent on population. So California has more electoral votes than Iowa. Iowa and Minnesota have more electoral votes than North and South Dakota, for example. Given that Democrats generally have large majorities or pluralities in major urban areas, including suburbia in most states, and that Republicans usually have majorities or pluralities in rural and exurban areas right now, there is a geographic component to the electoral vote in presidential elections. And this has been true since the establishment of the Republic. And of course, you know, I can hear people pointing their fingers and raising their hands and wanting to say, get rid of the Electoral College. That's not the purpose of this podcast. I don't care about that issue because we are not going to get rid of the Electoral College anytime soon. And we aren't going to be getting rid of it without a constitutional amendment. And we are not going to get rid of it in this cycle. So it's a reality that people have to deal with, whether they want to say that we should get rid of it or not. It doesn't matter what you think on that issue at this particular moment in time. And that's where we begin to get into the problem with polling. A presidential election ultimately depends on having what is called an electoral majority, and that means they have to have an electoral strategy, and all the campaigns do. That is a strategy to get a majority of electoral votes. In 2016, there were a total of 538 electoral votes. I believe that's what we'll have again this time around. That means 538 electors gather in their respective states at a particular date in December after the national election and popular vote for the president has been counted, and after the Senate and the House have been chosen. In other words, those are the people that you're voting directly for, and they choose a president. And the president usually needs at least 270 electoral votes to win the election. Now, in today's language, that means you go for electoral vote-rich states. In almost all the recent elections, that ends up being Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas for both parties, and a host of Midwestern states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, and Missouri, and a half a dozen states that are called swing states. And of course, some of the states I mentioned are swing states. And then you get states like Colorado, maybe Nevada, Virginia, and so forth, or North Carolina have been known recently to swing back and forth or to be put in so-called play. And those states change given the electoral map and the issues at hand. And I don't need to go into too much detail here about the nature of these states. I mention them for the simple reason that the presidential election usually comes down to a few states which are electoral vote rich, which can be won by a half a percentage point or a point or 2 points or a little more. We're living through a period of time for the last seven or eight cycles where victories have been won by very slim margins by presidents. And I'm going back, I guess you could say, to George H.W. Bush, all the way through Clinton, Obama, Bush 2, and of course, Donald Trump. For example, if you were looking for a major political shift, what if New York or California started voting Republican consistently, or Texas started voting Democrat? Those would indicate major changes in the way that people are voting, and it would change the calculus of candidates, which will change how they campaign and what they say and what issues that they run on. Now, we're not dealing with that in this election cycle, at least so far. Usually it's after the election that we find out what actually happened, and people like political scientists start parsing the numbers to try to figure out what it all means. And that's when you get these sort of blanket statements from political scientists about what happened in the recent election. So what about polling? You just mentioned that you were going to talk about polling, Bob Davis. What about polling? So in the second half of this podcast, with what I have said in mind, because I think this is all mostly a disclaimer in the beginning of this podcast, I'm going to talk about polling. Got to mention this, I just put a Cartridge World cartridge in my printer, and I had another Cartridge World cartridge in my printer that just ran and ran and ran and ran, and they have solved a huge problem with me, which I was spending like $140 a month on print cartridges, and I've saved at least 30% compared to the big box stores. Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Call them at 763-420-6632. They can hook you up no matter where you are in the country. And don't forget that. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says Cartridge World. So my mom just got a four-season porch done down in Virginia, and she loves it. It's amazing, and it really has helped blow the house out. It's amazing how much bigger the house is with this four-season porch that used to be a deck, and it's hard to believe, but you can turn your deck into a four-season porch. If you want to do that, the guy in Minnesota to talk to is Randy Grabo at Whitetail Builders, Inc. in Andover, Minnesota. They've been getting a lot of requests to turn decks into four-season porches, and it really does a great thing, and it creates value for your house. So it doesn't matter whether it's a new kitchen or a man cave or fixing up the basement, Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota, they're online at whitetailbuildersinc.com. They're going to be with you every step of the way. And the people that use Randy just love them. 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams. And of course, you know, the next disclaimer is that I really don't care who wins this election. And I'm certainly not going to support or attack either candidate. And I'm not going to support or attack any issues. I have covered both Republicans and Democrats in this cycle. The last time here, I focused on Democrats. And in 2016, I focused on Republicans. And I've met very nice people in both camps. Moreover, I have decided that partisanship is a huge disservice to voters. My only partisanship is I think commentators should steadfastly refuse to back a candidate, to endorse a candidate, or predict what will happen on election day. I think this penchant for telling people what is going to happen before it happens with the media is a terrible disservice to the American people, because people begin to pick up storylines and they think the storylines are fact because for some reason they think whatever they read is true. And you get this massive confusion when the hurricane that was predicted to destroy the city doesn't happen. Then they say, they lie. Well, they aren't lying so much as they're just not doing a very good job. And I have a lot of theories about that, which I don't need to get into right now. The main theory is that there's just so much time to fill in media that they're left with this kind of predicting the future problem in order to, just fill airtime. I think that's a huge problem. You know, and it's also natural that people are going to say, who do you think is going to win? That's what people always, as soon as they find out that I do even remotely political podcast, people say, well, who do you think is going to win? And we should say, those of us who are, you know, content creators, I have no idea, because I can't predict the future, and neither can you, and neither can anyone. But that doesn't stop these people from grabbing a poll and saying, this one's going to win, or this one's in trouble, or what's going to happen now, because that's how apparently you sell newspapers. And really, I don't care. And the reason I don't care is I don't think the American political system is serving the American people, and I don't think the American political system is serving up leaders. I think we're getting apparatchiks of various types and, lowest common denominators, and I don't like any of them. And so for me to say that I care who is going to be the president, I have to tell you, I'm disgusted with all of them at this point. And I've just done a recent podcast about how the whole coronavirus response and this whole riot thing is a perfect example of how the government is not working and how we're running things by mob rule in this country. Now, at some point, I will tell you what I think, but it's going to be after the election and not before it. And when I do, I'm not going to waste anyone's time by trying to convince them to think this way or that. You do you, and I will do me. Here's the thing with polling. The popular vote is meaningless when it comes to polling. So looking at nationwide polls is as useless as tits on a bull, and all of these pundits cannot stay away from talking about national margins. Moreover, and this is another thing I noticed recently, they keep looking at these job approval polls that some of these pollsters, they all do it. And job approval for a president is really not a good indicator because, you know, they'll say, well, if it's below a certain point, it indicates they might lose. Or if it's above a certain point, they might, win. And or they think it's actually the poll of, do you think so-and-so is going to win the presidency or should be the president? Or would you vote for this person? Those are all completely different questions. And so looking at presidential preference polls are different from how people think the president is doing at their job, as if they could judge that. So you hear a lot of reporters saying, oh, Joe Biden's ahead by 11 points. That's in the job approval category. That is not in who are you going to vote for in November. So these are little distinctions that people write articles and people don't make the distinction because the writers don't make the distinction for whatever reason. So how, Bob Davis, do you tell what's going on? Well, first of all, you listen to my podcast because I'm going to keep you updated on these polls. Second, what you have to do is look at individual state polls. And right now, there aren't enough of those to paint a full picture. And we have been treated to a full headline, a smorgasbord of reports that Trump is going to pull this out or that Biden is going to win by a landslide or that Trump is going to win by a landslide. One of the other things that I've seen that drives me crazy is that we don't really have any polls after the riots and the demonstrations that we have had. So the most recent polls were June 3rd. And obviously, the George Floyd situation has really gathered momentum in the last 3 or 4 days. And I'm recording this podcast on the 6th of June. Once we start getting a reasonable crop of state-by-state polls by the late summer and early fall of 2020, well, then I can start giving you updates on how those polls are playing out. And those are going to be dependent on these fast-moving news stories and issues that are affecting presidential politics and, quite frankly, national politics. First of all, you don't look at a single state-by-state poll and say, see, my guy's winning. You have to average those polls in those states. And when you do, you'll find out some interesting realities. Right now, here's how it shakes out in some of the key states at the beginning of June 2020. Now, I will tell you, there's a number of battleground states and states that you should look at closely that don't even have enough polls or any polls, especially when it comes to the Senate race. In other words, who's going to end up winning the Senate race? So that's the first caveat that people need to hear. So in two recent polls in Wisconsin, one has Biden up by 9 and the other is a tie. So with a plus minus error rate of about 5% or more, depending on the sample size in that state, it's much closer in Wisconsin than it has been reported. We've been hearing and hearing and hearing, oh, Trump's in trouble in Wisconsin. Well, that tells me right now that it is a statistical tie in Wisconsin between the president and the former vice president if Biden is going to be the nominee, which he probably will be. But anyway, now you can say, well, he's going to lose Wisconsin, and you're welcome to your opinion, but there's no polls that say that right now. In Arizona, one poll has Biden up by 4 and the other has Trump up by 1. Statistically, again, Arizona, which is now being said as a, you know, it's going to be a battleground state when it was a traditionally Republican state, statistically, that is a tie. So again, that's not a state that you can say that Trump is winning or losing. In North Carolina, which is increasingly looking like a swing state as well. Three recent polls show a mix of results. One has Biden up by one, another shows Biden up by four, and one shows the president up by three. Again, statistically, this is a tie. And I'll put links in so you can go look at these and you can see who did them. And if you want to, you can pull the poll and you can look at the questions and you can make all of your little, you know, highly detailed and picky judgments about it. But if you look at it from the perspective of what do the polls say, let's average them and let's see where we're at. I can tell you that I've given you three battleground states or so-called battleground states right now. None of them show an advantage for either party or either president. Where was I? There's a single poll in the last month which shows Biden up by three in Florida. I've seen polls previously that have shown Trump up in Florida and vice versa. There is a single poll that shows Trump up by only one in Texas. These were just taken in the last week. There is a single poll showing Trump up by four in Pennsylvania. And there is a single poll that shows Biden up by three in Michigan. Now, some websites that I follow will average the last several polls, so these results will change more slowly when they are average. If you're going to average them, really, what you really need to do is take all those polls, take all the data, and recalculate the data based on those sample sizes, but we don't have the data to do that, so we just average the total, right? So those numbers show some interesting things. First of all, when it comes to key states, on the front page of realclearpolitics.com, where they do average them, there's a window right there, and I'll put up a link for it on the blog. Florida's average has Biden up by 3.4%, which, even though it looks impressive, is a statistical tie. In Pennsylvania, Biden up by 4, which is critical, but it's also a tie, you know, statistically speaking. And in Wisconsin, Biden up by 3.4, which is also a tie. In North Carolina, Biden's up by 0.8. It's virtually the same between him and Trump. You can't even look at a margin like that. And in Arizona, Biden is up by 2.8, which is a statistical tie. Now, lest you think that I'm trying to make the Democrats look bad, I'm just simply giving you the results of these polls averaged. And if you don't like it, it's got nothing to do with me. Again, I really don't care which guy wins at this point. And some people think take that as a bias. Well, if you don't care, if you're not going to support Trump, you know, if you're not going to support Biden, if you're not going to throw your support behind this movement or that movement, I don't believe in that. And I don't believe that I can do a good job as a podcaster if I do that all the time. And so I won't do it. A special concern is whether the Democrats will take control of the U.S. Senate in this election, as I've said. So there's a lot of toss-up races. In other words, too close to predict. Martha McSally in Arizona, where more than six polls taken since March show astronaut Mark Kelly leading McSally, who, by the way, was appointed to replace the late John McCain after losing a bid for the Senate in 2018. She is down by an average of roughly 9.5 points. Now, for Kelly, that exceeds statistical standards. So if it's 4 or 5 points either way, you could say he's up by 10, or you could say he's up by 4 or 5. So it gets a little closer when you start looking at 4 or 5, depending on what the standard deviation for those numbers is. In Colorado, we've heard a lot about Colorado, either shifting Republican or shifting Democrat, and there is a potential tight race for the Senate, but there's only one poll. So whatever you hear about Colorado, there's not enough information there yet. The other thing about these statewide polls, I got to say this, statewide polls are notoriously unpredictable in terms of their results and unreliable because usually they don't call enough people. So you call 500-600 people in a state like Minnesota, that's not enough. You should call 1,200 at least in the state of Minnesota. And in most of these states, with the exception of North Dakota or South Dakota, where they only have 600,000 or 700,000 residents, you really should call 1,200 because you got to distribute it geographically. And in most states, they don't do that. And so you get these wild swings geographically. They try, but they really don't have enough sample to do a really good job. So what that means is in Minnesota, we have 3 or 4 major population centers. Obviously, Minneapolis and St. Paul, Duluth, and Rochester are, and also Western Minnesota are population centers. But if you just do 500 people, then you really can't stratify the sample geographically effectively. So you really should do at least 1,200. It's the difference between 98% reliability and 90% reliability. And what that means for standard deviation is you're looking at 4 or 5 or 10 points on the result, depending on what it is. So just a reminder, when I used to do radio research, we would take week after week after week of sample and roll them, meaning we would combine them and retabulate so that we had at the end of a period of time when we issued a final report over a three-month period, we'd have sample sizes of like 5,000. And so when you get up in there, you're really getting into reliability, especially when it comes to individual demographics, 25 to 34s, 18 to 24s, you know, 35, 44s, and so forth. And demographics are really important in political research because we know that older people are more likely to vote than younger people. The other thing I should mention, and I'm sorry to digress, but I will, is voter screens. They are really important. So if you're doing a poll and you don't have an effective voter screen, then it just you can just throw the results out the window. They're useless because if you don't have a good voter screen, then you're not actually determining the information based on whether those people are going to vote. And the last point there is the closer to the election, the more likely people are to vote. So the voter screens become very important down to the wire. Let's see, where was I? In Maine, this is another race that's been, Susan Collins is going to be out. She's going to be out. Susan Collins is in a close race for re-election, and that one right now is a statistical tie, and there's very little polling in Maine. In Michigan, incumbent Democrat Gary Peters is challenged by Republican John James. Peters leads James by an average of 6.4%, just above a tie statistically. Much has been written about the North Carolina Senate race with Tom Tillis being challenged by Democrat Cal Cunningham. So far, the polls show a close race with no clear advantage for either candidate. So again, swing state. North Carolina is going to be a swing state. North Carolina might go Democrat. And this will be historic. They have no idea whether it's going to go Democrat or not. It's just all based on man on the street interviews, which means I'm a reporter and I'm here at this thing and there's other people here at this thing. So I'm going to talk to them and find out what they think. And why are they there? They're there because they're politically active. And what are they going to say? That's why I don't interview people when I cover the Democrats or the Republicans, because the people that go to these events are all political animals anyway. They're not regular on the street people. If you want to meet the on the street people, you got to go back to what I did last summer when I went to Iowa. And I have a good friend whose father is a pig farmer and a grain farmer in Iowa. And she said, I'll hook you up with my dad. And I went and talked to this farmer. And I said, when was the last time you saw a politician knock on your door? Never. And when was the last time someone interviewed you as to what you think? Never happened. Never seen the media out here. And they weren't that far from Des Moines. So the media doesn't go and talk to normal people. So when they write these stories about North Carolina being a battleground state or whatever, they're basing it on these very close-in discussions with people on the street or with politically active people who are gonna read the tea leaves. And that's exactly what it is. It may as well be tarot cards or tea leaves or horoscopes. That's about as much use as that kind of information is. And the media is chock full of that kind of crap. Joe Biden likes to talk about Iowa Senator Joni Ernst on the campaign trail when he's in Iowa. And again, people have been talking, oh, Joni Ernst, she's in trouble. There's no Democratic candidate right now, and there's no polling in Iowa when it comes to Joni Ernst. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens. And the Des Moines Register will probably be the one that does the poll. And then we're going to need more polls before we can say that Joni Ernst is in trouble. Republicans currently control the U.S. Senate with 53 members. The Democrats have 45 with two independents. So when we talk about controlling the Senate, when you hear reporters saying, oh, the Democrats are going to control the Senate, which could happen. I'm not saying it wouldn't. But to control the Senate after 2020, what's 53 minus 45? It's 8. So they would have to win at least 8 seats and lose none to actually have 53 votes or 52 votes. They'd have to win 6 or 51 votes. They'd have to win 5 races, which is entirely possible depending on the state election. But again, remember what I said about state-by-state polls and predicting Senate races based on state-by-state polls. So when you look at the data and then compare that to the nonsense you've been hearing, well, you can see what I mean. And I've I've really held my tongue because I haven't wanted to say anything until I felt like it was a good time to say it. And the question is, will there be a landslide victory for either side in 2020? First of all, I can't predict that. If there would be, it would be history, because right now the polling shows another close race, which is going to depend on voter turnout in key states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and I guess that's about it when it comes to Missouri, Iowa, and places like that. So the electoral map might shift a lot on election night depending on where this vote comes down. And more than probably any other year in the last 4 or 5 years, what is going on in this country is probably going to have a major effect. As far as a decisive advantage over Trump or a decisive advantage over Biden, you know, if it happens, we will see it in the polling. We have plenty of time to see a decisive advantage begin to develop, and we'll be talking about it going forward. But I wouldn't even begin to say any of these polls are definitive at this point, and we won't be able to until mid to late August and early September and early October. Right? Now, one other disclaimer. I'm starting to read these stories about the quote-unquote great silent majority that's going to propel Trump to a decisive victory over whatever candidate the Democrats nominate, which, again, looks like Biden. It is possible that Trump supporters do not show up in polling because they don't trust anyone, they think the media lies, and they think pollsters lie. So I can't see them enthusiastically participating in a survey about who they vote for, but for people that I know that do calling and they do a different type of polling, they have talked to a number of Trump supporters. So, you know, I'm not sure that the silent majority thing is really true. And we won't know until election night, to tell you the truth. And the key thing here is Trump's 2016 victory was attained with very slim margins in key states, which did not come in until very late. Pennsylvania came in about 1 o'clock. Michigan did not come in until the next day, and so on. And that could be the case again in 2020. And if so, this is one that's going to be fought in the trenches. So it's about voter turnout. It's about who shows up to vote. And I will say that people, again, consistently make the mistake of saying the polls lied. They said Hillary Clinton was going to win in 2016. They did not say that. No poll said Hillary Clinton was going to win. They said she could win the popular vote. But when you looked into state-by-state polls, and if you listened to my podcast, you heard me say, this one is too close to call. I went through all the advantages for both candidates. I went through the battleground states before they even called them the battleground states. And I was one of the early people that said, look, Trump can win this, because the people that were looking in the popular vote just laughed at Trump, and they're not laughing anymore. So again, could he win a second term? It's entirely possible that he could. It's also entirely possible that he could be defeated, and he could be defeated decisively. It's also possible that he could win decisively, which will be historic. There's lots of comments about how America is divided these days. This is another storyline that really drives me crazy. And yet, most of the pluralities in most of these states are thin. They did not win by big majorities. His biggest win in 2016 was in Ohio with something like 9 points, right? So the reality is elections still belong to those who show up. Most of them are pluralities. They are not majorities. So they're 1% and 2% victories. No one red state is all one thing, and no blue state is all one thing. In fact, most of the time, if you take the time to look into county by county votes, even the so-called red or blue counties in red or blue states, the votes fall roughly 40-60 or 60-40 or 55-45. So theoretically, any close vote in any key state in any key precinct or county is winnable by both sides. That does not look to me like a divided nation. It looks to me like people thinking seriously about who they want to lead the country, and they have their reasons. Now, we can poo-poo the reasons. We can make fun of those people. We can call them Karens or snowflakes. We can call them socialists or communists, but they're thinking about what they're doing, and they're voting their conscience both locally and nationally. So I would conclude by saying that you really shouldn't pay any attention to what these people are saying about any of this stuff until we get into like September or late October or late October, because we're not going to know. These guys want headlines. They want people to tune in. They want eyeballs and ears, and saying the most lurid thing you can say, like so-and-so is going to win, or making these ridiculous predictions, you know, No one remembers the guy that said he's going to lose or he's going to win 6 months ago. And if they're wrong, they just move on and they keep doing this. And what they're doing is they're just trying to predict the future because they think that's the game, or to convince you to think in a certain way. That is not the game for me. I want to give you something to think about so that you understand what is going on, because I think people can think for themselves. It's just that we haven't been led to think for ourselves recently, and we haven't been called to think for ourselves recently. So this is just a little primer. I have to do these before every election that say, here's what the battleground looks like, here are the polls, and the next ones will be, sometimes I have to break them into two podcasts because they get very detailed. And again, I'm not trying to predict the future. I won't predict the future. I'm not advocating for Trump or Biden or anybody else. I'm not advocating for a particular issue, and I'm staying away from that. I'm not putting up a Facebook or Instagram post with a black screen in some sort of solidarity. Haven't said anything about that stuff in any of my social media because I think it's a disservice to my podcast, which is dedicated to being nonpartisan. And when I am partisan, you'll know, because I'll tell you this is my partisan opinion. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast. And really, thanks for sharing what we're doing on social media. Not looking for comments so much, but retweets and shares, whether it's LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter. And I appreciate listening to the Bob Davis Podcast off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, subscribing at iTunes. If you are using an Android device, quite honestly, I would suggest Spotify. And you can subscribe on Spotify. Just download the app, Stitcher.com, Google Play, or what is now the Google Podcast app, and many more sources. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts, podcast 932. Don't believe what they say about polls.
Mr. Nothing's got a lot. He's got a lot to say. He's good at being. Gives nothing away. Another day goes on by, and he never speaks his heart. No, 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 no. He takes his chance with what he got. It's too late now to stop. And you feel the struggle with the night. It's tying you up while you're fading. You give and you take it, taking what you got. Round and round till it breaks, and you push and you pull the struggle with the night.